Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education, the programme that offers you an Irish perspective on the world of education. You can contact the programme via Twitter at InsideEd, through email insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie or through the programme's website insideed.com. If you have an education story or event that you'd like to share, please contact me and I'll do my best to feature it. We have an intercultural theme on the programme this week. Later, I'll be speaking to two Canadian professors who are experts on the topic. They visited Ireland during the week. But first, we're going to hear about a new book that was authored by Dr. Anne Dolan in Mary Immaculate College in Limerick. The title of the book is You, Me and Diversity, and its subtitle is Picture Books for Teaching Development and Intercultural Education. When I spoke to Anne earlier, I first asked her how the book came about.
First of all, I suppose the book is actually called You, Me and Diversity, Picture Books for Teaching Development and Intercultural Education. And the book is a result of 3 years of research. And as the government introduced a literacy and numeracy strategy, I was very concerned that people would be promoting a very functional form of literacy and numeracy. And as you're aware, literacy, it can be a gateway to a range of scientific, historical and geographical concepts. So I was interested in promoting a broader view of literacy, and particularly literacy that would serve us as a multicultural society. So this book, it was supported by Irish Aid and by the DICE project. And the DICE project is a project which supports colleges of education to promote development and intercultural education in teacher education. I researched the book. It was funded by Irish Aid. I suppose I started looking at children's picture books, and it was an exciting story, and I took it from there.
That's what I was interested in, Anne. Which came first? Was it the interest in intercultural education, or was it the interest in the storybooks?
I suppose it's a bit like a chicken and egg situation. I was in Zambia about 7 years ago, and I was invited to give a workshop on geography to a group of teachers, and I another teacher was invited to give a talk about picture books, and we ended up using the same picture books called We're Going on a Bear Hunt by Michael Rosen, and we just took two different perspectives. She looked at the literacy angle and I looked at the geographical and the mapping angle, and when we put the two of them together, it just was a fantastic coalition of ideas. So it just started the ball rolling in terms of using visual literacy and using picture books and the ideas that they bring to introduce children to a range of global and justice issues. And bear in mind, these issues can be very complex for children and they can be off-putting for teachers, and sometimes teachers worry about their own knowledge. So I found it was a fantastic medium to bring these ideas to children in an age-appropriate way.
And when you talk about intercultural education, how do you define the idea?
Well, I suppose intercultural idea, I see it as a process which respects, celebrates and recognises diversity and promotes equality and human rights while challenging unfair discrimination. So on the one hand, it respects diversity, it respects and celebrates different cultures, but it also challenges unfairness, it challenges discrimination. It tries to get people to look at how we're treating other people in our society, and it tries to hold a mirror up to that. So it's a critical form of education as well. So there's both a celebration aspect and an investigative critical aspect to it.
And when people hear about picture books, they're going to think that this book is for very young children. Is that the case?
No, that's a myth. I'm glad you highlighted the point. There's a myth that picture books are just for young children. But in this book, I have developed a directory of picture books for all ages of primary children, from infants up to sixth class. And I've broken the directory into different age groups. I've also developed a curriculum framework that teachers can adapt for themselves. And it's broken into three sections, namely respect, understanding and action.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I suppose it's a step-by-step framework whereby teachers start off with respect. For example, I can't respect other people if I don't respect myself. So there's picture books about self-esteem and self-affirmation and learning to respect oneself. And the next part then is respecting other people and respecting the environment. So that's the respect framework, and that can be taught from all class levels, and I have picture books for all levels to look at that part of the framework. Then move on to understanding, and understanding different cultures, understanding global movements, understanding how change has taken place in society. And again, there's picture books for every age group under that banner of understanding. And finally, I look at action. What kind of actions have people taken? What kind of actions can children take? And again, that's age appropriate from infants up to sixth class. So, for example, if you take the issue of global warming and climate change, there's a lovely picture book called Winston of Churchill, One Bear's Battle Against Global Warming. And this is set in Manitoba in Canada. And it's all about global warming from the polar bear's perspective. So it's immediately accessible to children. It's quirky. It looks at the issue in a very child-friendly way. And bear in mind, global warming and climate change, these are very complex issues for adults. But this book communicates a central message to children through the pictures and through the text. And in picture books, the text and the pictures work together, and they invariably are works of art in their own right, but they work together. So they promote visual and critical literacy as well.
When you say, Anne, that the book took you 3 years to research, what kind of research did you have to do?
Well, basically, I looked at hundreds of picture books, and I tried to look at picture books that were printed since 2000 to give it kind of a contemporary feel, and I wanted to look at books that would be accessible to teachers and that were fairly relatively recently published. But I looked at hundreds and hundreds of picture books. I developed this very extensive directory, which would be a fantastic resource for teachers, but even in terms of coming up with a very simple framework of respect, understanding and action, believe it or not, that took up time to come up with that framework. There's a very, very strong theoretical perspective in the book as well. I've looked at Freirean ideas, I've looked at social justice ideas, so it's set in a very strong theoretical framework. So it's very, very well researched. So people who are interested in theory and practice will find lots of interesting information in this book. I suppose the other thing as well, just to highlight, the picture books, I think, should serve two functions for children in our classrooms today. They should serve as a mirror and they should serve as a window. And by mirror, I mean the children should be able to see themselves. They should be able to see their own culture, their own traditions. But also, they should be able to see through a window, they should be able to see other cultures, other worldviews, other ideas. So it's very important that we have both aspects of windows and mirrors. And it's very interesting to talk to teachers and ask them what kind of literature did they read when they were children, and to see if they experienced literature as a window or as a mirror or as both. And ideally, it should serve as both.
When you were working on the book, Anne, did you get the opportunity to work with any children using the picture books with an intercultural perspective?
I did. And I tried out some of the ideas in the book on children in classrooms. Now, I suppose that has informed the book. It's not a primary focus of the book. And I suppose if I ever write a book again, I'll go back and look at children's perspectives, because I found it fascinating using picture books in the classroom. One classroom I went into in Limerick, I read a very simple picture book, and I had it up on the interactive whiteboard. And there was a boy in the class who became really, really excited, and I just assumed he was the best boy in the class. He had his hand up, he was fully engaged, he was very interactive, he was very interested. And he absolutely loved the experience, he loved the story, he loved the pictures. But when I was speaking to the teacher afterwards, the teacher said to me, "My God, what did you do to that child?" Because he had Asperger's, and usually he found it very difficult to participate in class, and for this class he just engaged with the picture book. So it was a very interesting example of picture books appealing to all kinds of learners, including learners with special needs. And I find as well that, for instance, struggling readers can participate in a class, they can discuss the complex issues, they don't have to experience the same hurdles with reading. They can read the pictures, they can engage in the class as other children who can engage through text. Children who can read pictures and who may have difficulties in reading can find this media very, very appropriate for them.
And the book, Anne, is it's published by IOE Press and Trentham Books. And I read a review that it got in Teaching English, and it was very complimentary.
Absolutely, and I'm delighted with that review. But I suppose the reviewer actually got the message that I was trying to promote. I was trying to promote the use of picture books in a classroom. I'm trying to promote broader views of literacy. In our world today, children are constantly being bombarded with visual images, and it's very important that children learn to read beyond the visual images, to look at what messages are being communicated. So I think it's very important that we teach skills of visual literacy and critical literacy, and that we embrace intercultural education and we embrace global and social issues, because we're living in a very complex world today, a world that's changing dramatically as we speak. So children have the skills to deal with this ever-changing world. So I suppose the reviewers actually got that message, and I was delighted about that.
Well, the closing sentences of the review are that it should be on every book list for trainee teachers and integrated into the staff development sessions of every school. It is without doubt one of the most useful and timely books for teachers to emerge over the past 10 years. So higher praise than that would be hard to get, Anne.
That's true. And it's fantastic to have an opportunity to speak about the book on this programme as well, Sean, because uh-huh. I would like teachers to ask their libraries to order it, to read the book and to think about some of the messages for their own teaching.
And where is the book available, Anne? Presumably on Amazon?
It's available through Amazon, through Book Depository. I'm trying to encourage bookshops to order it, but you know yourself, with the recession, bookshops are a little bit slow to take risks at the moment, but it's definitely there on Amazon and the Book Depository at the moment.
And well done on the publication, and thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much, Sean.
You're listening to Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney, on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Next, I want to introduce you to the first of two Canadian guests who are on this week's programme. Dr. Clee Smith is an associate professor in the Faculty of Education at the University of Manitoba in Canada. She has a particular interest in supporting immigrant students, teachers and families, including students, teachers and families for whom English is an additional language. She was in Ireland during the week and explained to me how schools in Canada are becoming more diverse, especially in Toronto, Montreal and Vancouver, although more recently immigrants are beginning to settle outside of these more traditional areas. I asked Clee to tell me the implications of the growing diversity of the Canadian population for teaching and teachers.
We need teachers who are aware of the diversity in the communities and able to respond to that meaningfully in the classroom. Despite our very diverse student population, we still have a predominantly white, middle-class, monolingual English-speaking female teaching force. And so we see quite a mismatch between the teaching force on the whole and the student populations and the families that we work with in schools.
And is that really, though, such a problem? Because children will only experience a small number of teachers over the course of their time in school. So, you know, even if you have a very diverse teaching force, any individual child's experience of it may still be more restricted.
It may be more restricted, but I would argue that it's extremely important to diversify the teaching force so that students, maybe they may not have a teacher exactly of their background in their lifetime in school, but I think they need to benefit from the expertise and worldviews and diversity of perspectives that a range of teachers bring. And if they only ever have a white, female, middle-class, Canadian-born, monolingual English speaker, I think that gives people very particular ideas about what it means to be a teacher, who can be a teacher, who is a holder of knowledge in the society. I mean, I think it conveys very implicit assumptions about those things. And so I think diversity of the teaching profession can be a benefit to many students.
And while the teaching profession is going to become more diverse, which will probably take a little bit of time, what can teachers do to provide for the diverse background of students in their classroom as things stand?
Well, one of the things that we advocate is simply getting to know who are your students. We underscore, for example, when working with English as an additional language populations, that even though we use a term, a label like EAL, all labels are inherently problematic and limiting. And within that term English as an additional language, you've got a wide range of students from a wide range of backgrounds with varying needs and interests. And it really isn't possible to generalize and say, well, I have a student from China, therefore my approach should be X, Y, and Z. That really you've got to get to know some of the complexity of your students' lives. And your students are the experts on their own lives, so they need to be integrally involved in that conversation to make effective pedagogical decisions.
And should that take place as part of the regular curriculum time in school?
It has to take place as part of the regular curriculum time. Whatever model of support you advocate, the reality is language learners, students of diverse backgrounds, are mainstreamed for at least part of the day to begin with, and mainstreaming very quickly becomes the dominant model. In other words, any kind of pull-out support is necessarily limited, both because it's beneficial for students to be integrated with their mainstream peers, but also resources simply aren't there to provide isolated instruction, which, as I've said, is undesirable on some level anyway, for an extended period. So the reality of it is that most of the programming falls to mainstream classroom teachers, and so everybody really needs to be prepared to take up this challenge.
Okay, so supposing I'm teaching, say, mathematics or I'm teaching language, how can I take an approach that is respectful and embracing of the diverse learners in my class?
Well, one of the things we look at doing, particularly for language learners, is to help teachers understand where does language lie in their disciplines. So there's a common myth about math, for example, that math is based on numbers and therefore it's a universal language that will be easily accessible to students regardless of the language background that they have. We know that to be an incorrect assumption on a number of levels. First of all, math is very language intensive, and there are many features of math that are not universal across the world. We also know that in the curriculum in several Western jurisdictions, Canada being one of them, we place very heavy emphasis on the language of doing math. It's not just about finding the answer to an equation, presenting the number and off you go. You know, we emphasize math journaling, in which students really need to articulate clearly why they made the decisions they did in reaching the answer they reached. And so that's very language intensive. And so a place to start would be to help those math teachers understand, where does language fit into the math curriculum? What areas of the language do students need to know? And how can I help make that more accessible for them?
And is it possible for a teacher to do that without having a good knowledge of the student's first language or the language that they're most comfortable in communicating in?
I think it's certainly possible to still be responsive to students even if you don't know the first language of the students. I mean, I think over time in working with a diverse group of learners, you very quickly develop a working knowledge of some features of the students' home languages, which certainly helps. But another strategy we advocate is being inclusive of students' first languages in the classroom, and you can do that without necessarily knowing that language. So for example, on a brainstorming task, if you want students to be able to access the concepts in the language they know them best, we encourage teachers to have the students brainstorm and get some of their initial ideas down in the language they know best. Yes, eventually they will be responsible for some product in English or in French or whatever the language of instruction happens to be, but they can certainly incorporate that first language. We don't have to tell students to leave it at the door. And in fact, we know that it's very beneficial to continue to support that first language development while they're learning English as an additional language.
What kind of policy initiatives are being taken in Canada to make the teaching population more diverse?
At the policy level, there are some policies of school boards, school divisions, where the hiring policies tend to be developed. Statements that say, we want to diversify our teaching force to better reflect our communities, and they will indicate the various aspects of diversity that they're looking to enhance. So there are school divisions that are taking a very proactive stance in this respect. Of course, we have anti-discrimination laws in Canada generally that are supposed to protect against employment discrimination. But I would say it's a bit of a tough go in the teaching profession, given this predominance of Canadian-born teachers. It's still, I think there's a shift that needs to occur to fully embrace a more diverse teaching force. Particularly, you have to understand the context of employment for teachers in many parts of Canada at this time. It's quite a dire situation. It's not true across the country. We do have northern and rural communities. Alberta is a province that seems to have more of a teacher shortage at the moment. But in many urban centres across Canada, there is a vast surplus of teachers.
So there isn't much point in an Irish teacher going out to look for work in Canada unless they wanted to go to Alberta?
Or if you were willing to work in an Aboriginal community in the north, you would be most welcome. And in fact, Irish teachers would be welcome in Canada generally. It's just that the employment situation is a bit challenging at this time.
And isn't it good to hear that a welcome awaits Irish teachers in Canada? Well, on her visit to Ireland, Clee was accompanied by Dr. Antoinette Gagné, who is an associate professor with the Department of Curriculum, Teaching and Learning at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education. From 2005 to 2012, she was the director of the concurrent teacher education program with a very diverse population of teacher candidates at the University of Toronto. I first asked Dr. Gagné how ethnic, linguistic, religious, cultural and gender diversity in our classrooms enhances the learning of all students in the room.
We live in a very diverse world, and we feel that all children will benefit from learning about the diversity around them so that they can, in fact, become good citizens, good global citizens, and develop intercultural communication skills while they are in a safe place, which is their own classroom and their own school. What we do promote is lots of images and artifacts in the school, as well as readings and other resources that represent the wide range of diversity, so that not only can the children see themselves and the diversity of the world around, but also parents and families can see themselves when they come into the school.
Okay. One of the features of Irish education is that a large number of schools are actually church-run or church-based. To what extent, and again, I can imagine that Canada is a little bit different in that regard, but to what extent do you think school needs to be prepared to change its policies, like in terms of prayer, in terms of uniform, in terms of enrollment and so on, in order to be accommodating of a diverse student population?
Well, we have an interesting mix of options available to parents in at least the Toronto context, but I think pretty much across the country. So the Toronto example would include the option to send one's child to public school where there is no particular religion which is taught or favored, but where religious accommodations are made through the provision of prayer rooms or not penalizing a child for being away for a religious holiday. But we also have 40% of our population who do attend Catholic schools. And in Catholic schools, in the elementary division, there is quite strict adherence to Catholic education and Catholic values, whereas in Catholic secondary schools, there is a greater openness to admitting students from many different backgrounds. And interestingly enough, there's a fairly large population from our immigrant families who do opt for Catholic schools. because there is a perception from some families who may be from a different religion that the Catholic system is a better and safer place for their children because these are other people who have strong faith and adherence to particular beliefs. Within the school system, that the Catholic school system, therefore, at the secondary school level, there's a little more openness, but there is higher structure and less accommodation, really, for the broader range. So the third type of school that we see is a denominational school that would be a private school. And we have Islamic schools, we have Christian schools, and, you know, a whole other range. And parents have the option, if they choose, to locate their children there. There is an Ontario-approved curriculum, but there is an infusion of the religious values of those particular communities.
How do teaching methods need to adapt to the presence of minority ethnic and minority language students?
I think Clee touched a little bit on this before, but we like to encourage all teachers to show a strong respect for students' mother tongue. And we have a term that is beginning to be a little more popular, translanguaging, which we like to encourage in the classroom. So if you imagine a diverse group of students in any particular school, there may be 5 or 10 different languages alive and well in the classroom. What we'd like to see is a classroom not only where we can see languages alive through labels and books and so on, but also classrooms where it's okay to hear the language. So at a small table where students may be doing problem solving, hearing one speaker of Korean who is more proficient in English and who's understood a lesson, actually using Korean as a bridge for that brand new arrival who really couldn't make out the explanations of the teachers. So it's allowing language to be recognized as a strength, a tool, but also a fundamental part of each child's identity, along with their culture, without ever putting children on the spot and expecting them to become experts of a particular culture, whether it, you know, be the Chinese culture or language.
It's interesting that in the past, there would have been more of a focus on students adapting to the majority languages in the country, which in Canada would be English and French. That policy is not as strong now, or is it?
In 2009, in Ontario, we launched a new policy, equity and inclusive education, which made it clear that equity means evening out the playing field and not looking at every child as being the same and needing just one pedagogy, but rather recognizing that we really have to work differently and to work with the strengths that the children are bringing. But ultimately, we do want every Canadian citizen to be able to function in one of the official languages, but we also prize well-being. In fact, another new policy that's recently been launched is a policy on student well-being that fully recognizes that when we ignore a child's home identity, language, religion, and everything else that makes them who they are, that they are not usually really healthy and happy children and won't ultimately turn into highly productive adults. So we have a whole new way, I think, of understanding the diversity in our population and working with our diverse children in schools.
Well, that's all we have time for on this evening's program. I'd like to thank my guests, Anne Dolan, Clee Smith and Antoinette Gagné. If you'd like to feature an idea or an event on a future programme, you can write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can listen to almost 200 podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.